the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Well, the hearings are over. It hardly seems possible, but the House of Representatives and the United States Senate are both going to be taking a little break over this weekend. But the United States Senate and its Judiciary Committee will have a particular break because the hearings for Judge John Roberts being confirmed as the next Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, they're now over. Now, the big question for us today is, what will this mean? We're going to be looking at the discussion that took place not only in the Senate chamber, but we're going to be bringing in some other comments, including some made by members of the House. They don't have a vote, but they do have a say in terms of how this issue is framed politically. We're going to be listening to some of the comments made by Judge Roberts in the course of these hearings, and we're going to be thinking clearly about what this should mean. And the question is this. You are listening to the hearings. What do you think? If you had a vote, how would you vote? You know, the nomination of the 17th Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court is just too important for us not to devote a major portion of conversation to what we think of these hearings. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Folks, there's all kinds of really interesting, fascinating, not to say troubling stuff in the news these days. From Massachusetts, we have word that the Massachusetts legislature overwhelmingly defeated a proposed constitutional amendment that would have banned same-sex marriage. It would also simultaneously have established civil unions as a substitute for same-sex marriage. And what you have here is a very mixed picture. Actually, partisans on both sides of the controversy over same-sex marriage in Massachusetts are cheering the defeat of this particular constitutional amendment. Those who are proponents of same-sex marriage don't want to see anything threaten the decision that was made by the Supreme Judicial Court of that state to establish same-sex marriage as a constitutional right. Meanwhile, on the conservative side, opponents of same-sex marriage don't want to see their state's constitution amended so as to install civil unions as a marriage light or a marriage equivalent within the very constitutional document of the state. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, a Republican, has stated his opposition to same-sex marriage. He actually celebrated the defeat of this particular amendment and said that he would be back with a simpler amendment that would, in essence, define marriage as the union of a man and a woman, period. We'll be watching to see how that comes down. There are other issues, of course, swirling about related to the issue of homosexuality. The Vatican has announced that it will review each of the 229 Roman Catholic seminaries in the United States for what it termed, quote, evidence of homosexuality. They'll also be looking at faculty members in order to find if there are any who dissent from church teaching. Now, this appears to be a big change from the Vatican, a very serious turn, as it looks like that the Catholic hierarchy in Rome now wants to call the American church, and in particular American theological seminaries serving the Roman Catholic Church, to account on the issue of homosexuality. Now, I'm reading to you from the New York Times. The very fact that I am a Protestant evangelical reading to you about this issue and talking about this issue means that I need to be especially circumspect not to speak wrongly. So I want to speak accurately. And I want to read to you directly from the New York Times. It says here, it is unknown how many Catholic priests are gay. Estimates range widely from 10% to 60%. Folks, that's right from the New York Times. Now, looking at the whole picture here, this has to tell you that this is an organization in deep trouble. And so we should not be surprised that now the Vatican wants to come down and have a thorough review. But this has led to an interesting debate among Roman Catholics. And it's one worth watching because even as this is taking place among Roman Catholics, the same kind of arguments are going to be found in mainline liberal Protestant denominations and elsewhere, where you're going to have defenders of the church's teaching saying, look, homosexuality is incompatible with a Christian lifestyle and with the Christian ministry. And you have others saying, no, the issue is merely celibacy. The issue is not so much sexual orientation as the willingness of a Catholic priest to be celibate. And so it shouldn't matter if it's a celibate heterosexual or a celibate homosexual. Well, this is where I have to jump in as an evangelical and say, this is why I consider celibacy to be an artificial requirement for ministry, not something found in Scripture. And because of this, I think it does matter. And I have to come back and say, the big issue for me is the fact that the minister being married and having the accountability of a wife and the accountability of a family establishes not only something that's not homosexual, it establishes something that is clearly heterosexual, that declares the glory of God in the one flesh relationship between the man and the woman, and in the natural life that comes out of that family through children and through all the structures of accountability that that come in the context of the family. Folks, if you've been reading my weblog, you know I've been giving a lot of attention in recent days to issues of cosmetic surgery, and we're going to take that up as a major concern in an upcoming program. Do you know right now that cosmetic surgery is becoming so common? And I'm talking about cosmetic surgery. It used to be called plastic surgery, but the reason it's not called that anymore is because plastic surgery also included reconstructive surgery that would, for instance, be the kind of surgery that would follow an accident or a massive surgery that would require some kind of reconstruction. But cosmetic surgery gets right to the heart of my concern. It's aesthetic surgery. It is surgery that is undertaken simply in order to meet some expectation of beauty. A research study came out just this week indicating that in Great Britain, the average British woman expects to have some cosmetic surgery procedure during her lifetime. That is a phenomenal cultural development right there. If cosmetic surgery becomes the new normal, then we have lost all conception of what normal is. That means that we have adopted such an artificial understanding of beauty that we are now putting women in the position of believing that they must, during their lifetimes, experience some cosmetic surgery if they're just going to keep up with normal expectations. Folks, you've heard me talk about this before, but I want to get right to the heart of the matter. This is a male problem and a female problem, and they go together. The male problem is this. You have young men today, and older men, tragically as well, who have had their picture of womanhood so distorted by the airbrushed and surgically enhanced pictures they see in the wrong kind of magazines and the wrong kind of websites and in advertising that's ubiquitous across this culture, that they no longer know what normal is. They no longer can see the kind of beauty that God has given us in women, and they no longer can even imagine the kind of inner beauty that is more important than outer beauty. It's a problem among women as well, because too many of them can simply think that they can establish their worth on the basis of this kind of surgery, that having this surgery will solve another problem. I find this very tragic, and I want to speak to both men and women. From a Christian worldview perspective, we should give thanks for the bodies that we have. We should take good care of them. But the idea of aesthetic surgery should be something that is foreign to the Christian mind. The fact that we would have surgery in our bodies because we don't like this and we're not satisfied with that, I just cannot imagine it, that it would be consistent with a Christian worldview perspective in terms of respect for the human body. But the situation gets even worse than that, and that's why I wrote about it. You can go to albertmohler.com, that's M-O-H-L-E-R, look at the weblog, and you'll find an article that I posted just on yesterday, Wednesday, entitled Culture Watch, Cosmetic Surgery and the Customized Self. I reference that article from Great Britain, but I also go to an article indicating that teenage girls now consider cosmetic surgery to be something that they would like to receive as a gift. And it is becoming something of a rite of passage, a graduation gift. Listen to this. I'm reading from a report about young women and cosmetic surgery in America. Last year, 3,841 women, 18 or younger, underwent breast augmentation. That's a 24% jump in just 1 year. This represents a 19% increase from the year 2001. This from a report from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. And I'm reading from this report. It says, with television shows showcasing plastic surgery, more teens view this kind of surgery as a commonplace procedure. A 17-year-old who saw one of the plastic surgeons said she thought it'd be a fun thing to do. And I'm quoting a doctor here who says, quote, they regard it as having your hair done or getting a new watch. She, that is this young teenage girl, had no concept that this is a serious operation. The University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine's psychologist David Sawyer said this. He said he hears anecdotes about suburbs of big cities where cosmetic surgery is a relatively common sweet 16 or high school graduation gift. Folks, this ought to be a wake-up call to us all. When we're looking at something like this, we're looking at human beings, in this case females, being turned into objects, no longer treated as persons. We're talking about the objectification of women, holding them up to a standard of beauty that isn't found in nature. It's found on the covers of these magazines, surgically enhanced, airbrushed, all the right lighting, looking for all the wrong features. This ought to remind us that we are a sinful race, human beings. We can corrupt almost anything, even something as beautiful as womanhood. And men and women become complicit in a conspiracy to deny God his glory in respect for the human body because we demand something different. Folks, we're going to be talking about the new Chief Justice of the United States of America. President Bush has nominated Judge John Roberts, and now the Senate Judiciary Committee is finished with its hearings confirming his confirmation. We'll see where this goes, but right now the question is, how would you vote? Were you satisfied with what you heard? The phone number 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, I hope you watched a great deal of the Senate Judiciary Committee's confirmation hearings for Judge John Roberts as the 17th Chief Justice of the United States. It's been a fascinating interplay of ideas. You know, it is a dance of sorts. And as a matter of fact, there's an artificiality to it because there's a lot of political posing and all the rest. But still, you can't have a hearing about a matter of this significance without getting down to some very important basic ideas. And what we got down to in the course of these hearings was a conflict over the very nature of the judiciary, over how we should interpret the Constitution, and all that points to a different future for the United States of America. And, you know, I think the big question for us today is whether or not you were satisfied. Did you hear what you were hoping to hear? Did you hear something you didn't want to hear? I mean, we all know that this is President Bush's appointment. We know of his confidence in this candidate. And we know of this candidate's brilliance, that was clear. It was demonstrated without a doubt in the midst of this. I think regardless of whether the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee will vote to confirm him as the next Chief Justice, if they ever got into trouble, they'd want him as an attorney. But the big question is, what do we want in a Supreme Court justice, in a Chief Justice, and does this man meet the muster? Because now America, as well as the Judiciary Committee, has had an opportunity to hear him. But we're going to hear him a little bit more, but get ready to call right now. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In the course of the give and take of all of this, Judge Roberts had a lot to say. For one thing, he talked about the role of a judge, and we heard that before. He talked about the humility that should be the part of a judge. And let's go to clip 12, guys. Let's just listen to him talk about the judiciary and the rule of law.
But it was after I left the department and began arguing cases against the United States that I fully appreciated the importance of the Supreme Court in our constitutional system. Here was the United States, the most powerful entity in the world, aligned against my client, and yet all I had to do was convince the court that I was right on the law and the government was wrong, and all that power and might would recede in deference to the rule of law. That is a remarkable thing. It is what we mean when we say that we are a government of laws and not of men. It is that rule of law that protects the rights and liberties of all Americans. It is the envy of the world, because without the rule of law, any rights are meaningless.
Wow. That's like a civics lesson in 50 seconds. That takes us right into the heart of the law. It takes us right into the mind of a judge who believes that his humble role is to interpret the law and to protect the rights of citizens under the rule of law. Now, in his first day, Judge Roberts used a metaphor that I think is very powerful. It's the metaphor of an umpire. Guys, let's roll clip 10 and let folks hear it.
Judges and justices are servants of the law, not the other way around. Judges are like umpires. Umpires don't make the rules, they apply them. The role of an umpire and a judge is critical. They make sure everybody plays by the rules, but it is a limited role. Nobody ever went to a ball game to see the umpire.
Well, that is a truism. That's absolutely true. And yet, you know, if you think of yourself as a judge, as a player, you think that you are there to make decisions in order to shape the culture and the future, according to what your vision would be of where the culture, the society, and the nation should go. Let's talk about some of the issues that really came up. You know, earlier this week, I listened with you to a clip from Senator Edward Kennedy about the interpretation of the Constitution and where Judge Roberts would fit on that. Let's listen to Kennedy again, because this really sets the stage.
Is this nominee going to be an ally towards the continued march towards progress, or is he going to be someone whose view of the Constitution is so restricted, so stingy, so constricted, that he will move us in a different direction?
Okay, now, Senator Charles Schumer of New York made a similar point, or I should say he tried to make it. I think he actually unmade it, but let's listen to it. This is clip number four.
What kind of justice will John Roberts be? Will you be a truly modest, temperate, careful judge in the tradition of Harlan, Jackson, Frankfurter, and Friendly? Will you be a very conservative judge who will impede congressional prerogatives but does not use the bench to remake society, like Justice Rehnquist? Or will you use your enormous talents to use the court to turn back a near century of progress and create the majority that Justices Scalia and Thomas could not achieve?
Well, I guess we know who he doesn't like. I mean, how clear is that? Here you have Charles Schumer speaking to Judge Roberts. He's really speaking over Judge Roberts to the public. Let's be honest about what was going on here. But as if he was speaking to him, he said, look, are you going to use your enormous talents to use the court to turn back a near century of progress? Isn't that what you hear now? So that's the mantra of the left, a near century of progress. And you can just play the battle hymn of the Republic in the background as you talk about this expanding vision of liberty that begins here and ends there. And yet it must not end. It must continue on into the future, because there are yet others to be liberated. There are other oppressive laws to be overthrown. There are social conventions like marriage to be transformed. This is the progress looking toward the future. And then you have Judge Roberts saying, look, that's not my agenda. I don't have an agenda. That's what he said over and over again. He said, I really am not coming with an agenda. I am here to rule according to the facts of the case and according to the rule of law. He said, and this was very important as well, he said, I'm not a politician. He said, I come before the committee with no agenda. I have no platform. Judges are not politicians who can promise to do certain things in exchange for votes. Now, how's that for clarity? But there was another exchange I want us to listen to. This is an exchange between Judge Roberts and Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. Let's listen.
Beyond loyalty to the process of law, how do you view this law when it comes to expanding our personal freedom?
Somebody asked me, are you going to be on the side of the little guy? You obviously want to give an immediate answer, but as you reflect on it, if the Constitution says that the little guy should win, the little guy is going to win in court before me. But if the Constitution says that the big guy should win, well, then the big guy's going to win, because my obligation is to the Constitution.
I just love that. I got to tell you, I'm sold on that one. You know, what he says here is that the Constitution is a balancing of rights. If the Constitution says the little guy wins, then the little guy wins. But if the Constitution says the big guy wins, the big guy wins. If the Constitution says that the big guy has no right to discriminate, has no right to oppress, has no right to abrogate the rights of the little guy, then the little guy can come to the Supreme Court and he can get his case heard, and if the Constitution is with him, the court will be with him. But if he's shoplifting from the big guy, and it is he who's done wrong, and the Constitution says the big guy is right, then the big guy has got the right to come into this court. What does that mean? That means equal protection under the law. Folks, I want to know what you think about this nominee. I want to know where you would vote, which way you would vote, if you were on the Senate Judiciary Committee. There's a big vote coming. It's going to come next week, and it's going to tell us just about everything we need to know about, things as complicated as the deal that was made by the Senate moderates to avoid the change in the filibuster rule. We're going to find out where we stand. Next week is going to be a fascinating week in the history of our country, and we're going to be talking about it right here. But now is the opportunity for you to say, before your senator votes, would you vote to confirm Judge John Roberts as the 17th Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The number 877-893-8255. We're talking about Judge John Roberts. You have your say right now in terms of his confirmation before the Senate has its say next week. 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Patrick calling from Tampa, Florida, listening at WTBN. Patrick, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. First of all, let me just tell you how much I really appreciate your show. You've really been a phenomenal cultural commentator from the evangelical world, and I just so much appreciate your insight. First of all, let me also say that I'm not sure I can be very objective about Judge Roberts because I am a conservative, but I would vote to confirm him. I think he's probably the most qualified nominee in 100 years for the court. But more than anything, and this is the reason I called, more than anything, I think I've sensed a sincere sense of humility on the part of this man, which is such a phenomenal combination given his intellectual prowess. And because of that alone, I would love to see him be confirmed.
Yeah, it's kind of a refreshing change, isn't it, Patrick? I mean, just to hear that kind of humility?
It really is, and I hope I'm not naive to get that impression, because I don't think this humility has been manufactured for the cameras. I think I've noticed it from the day he was first nominated and he started making the rounds with the senators, and it's just such a wonderful combination with someone that is that gifted. Yes, I'm conservative. I would love to see Roe v. Wade overturned, but more than anything, I'd just like to see someone who's that qualified and that much apolitical to be on the bench.
Patrick, I appreciate your call, and thank you, by the way, for your very nice comments about the program. You know, the issue of Roe v. Wade is very much at the center of this, but I think that has to do with what you're talking about. You see, I think for the Supreme Court to supposedly find in the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution a right to abortion, I think that is not humility. I think when Judge Roberts is talking about humility, he's talking not only about the humility that he believes personally he should demonstrate, and I think, Patrick, you were pointing that out, just by his demeanor, by his respect for the Senate and for the Constitution, I think he is a man who demonstrates personal humility. But what I appreciate, you know, functionally, perhaps even more than that, is his humble vision for the judiciary. Now, there are a lot of people who said, now, I wish that he had answered a question head-on on Roe v. Wade and on abortion. And I wish we were living in a political context in which that were possible. But the reality is that the Democrats have so stacked this that anyone who says, I believe that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided, and I believe that there is a right to life for a human being, a sanctity of life that should begin at conception and continue till natural death, that person will be borked, which is to recall the defeat of Robert Bork. During the 1980s, President Reagan's nominee. So I think we're just facing that reality. And so people ask me, were you concerned that he did not say that he would vote to overrule Roe v. Wade? No, because I understand that if he did say it, we'd be talking about one more failed nominee getting on the court. But I was listening for the kind of interpretation of the Constitution that would be humble and would understand that the judge is bound by the text and by the intention of those who wrote it and understood it originally. Folks, I want you to hear a montage put together, because one of the big deals here is that the Democrats who've been putting pressure on John Roberts, they weren't putting that kind of pressure on Ruth Bader Ginsburg during her hearings, and I pretty much think this is self-explanatory. You listen along.
I do think it's appropriate to point out that, Judge, you not only have a right to choose what you will answer and not answer, but in my view, you should not answer a question of what your view will be on an issue that clearly is going to come before the court.
Well, Senator, I can't answer that question in the abstract, because
it's not abstract. That's real.
Well, Senator, as a legal matter, it is abstract.
I can't answer a question like that in the abstract. I cannot say anything more than I have already said.
What you got right there is you have Senator Joseph Biden talking to Judge Roberts and also to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We're going to assume when we come back how things have changed. Just roll that for a few minutes.
Anything more than I have already said.
Just philosophically, what do you think? Do you think that is not what the Constitution says? What do you feel?
The position of a judge is not to incorporate his or her personal views in deciding issues of this sort. Your job as a judge is to interpret according to the rule of law.
My own view, I think, is not relevant to any question that I would be asked to decide as a judge.
He's filibustering, sir.
Go ahead and continue not to answer.
I think it's vitally important that nominees, to use Justice Ginsburg's words, no hints.
No hints.
No forecasts.
No forecasts.
No previews.
No previews.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, the reality is, and history will demonstrate this, that you really don't know what you have until a justice is sitting on the court. And over time, it is interesting to trace how the thinking and the jurisprudence of respective justices will be altered and modified over time. But with most justices, you're looking at a pretty consistent trajectory. And I think that's what, of course, many of us are going to be counting on with Judge John Roberts. He has been a judge on the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for 2 years. He's written over 50 written opinions. And he has a track record in terms of government positions in the Reagan administration and subsequent administrations. And that's where a lot of folks are getting their confidence about him. Let's go to Gary calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Gary, would you vote yes or no here?
Oh, absolutely yes. I mean, he's got the humble character your last caller commented about, and he does have a strict conviction about sticking to the Constitution. But I was curious about one thing that I read in the Courier Journal yesterday, if you don't mind commenting on.
Go right ahead.
When he asked about how his religion or his belief in the Bible would play a role in his making decisions, he commented that it wouldn't play any role. And I know that has to be taken in its context, and I was curious if you could just comment on that, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Yes, and I wish I had that transcript before me, but I'm telling you that basically, well, here I do have it. It was in an exchange with Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. She said this: in 1960, there was much debate about President John F. Kennedy's faith and what role Catholicism would play in his administration. At that time, he pledged to address the issues of conscience out of a focus on the national interest, not out of adherence to the dictates of one's religion. My question is, do you? Now, number one, before we ever get to his answer, I have to say that is one of the rudest, most arrogant, most audacious questions ever addressed by anyone who has ever been a holder of the position as a United States senator. What she basically said is, look, in order for you to have my respect, you're going to have to deny your faith. That's the bottom line. And that's what some said to John F. Kennedy in 1960, and they were dead wrong. It was wrong then, and it's wrong now. But Judge Roberts answered. He said that, indeed, he would judge on the basis of the Constitution. Now, I have to say that I, as a Christian, could have wished for a more eloquent and articulate description of the interplay between one's conviction and one's public responsibilities. But I have to say, cutting Judge Roberts some slack here, I think they would have mowed him over for it. And I just have to hope that he has a substantial worldview that is rooted in the Christian tradition. He is a practicing Roman Catholic, and that means that he ought to have a very firm understanding of the value and sanctity of human life and of the objectivity of truth. And other things that would be really important to us. I just have to hope that that will be a part of the whole person who does the job of humble constitutional interpretation. And, you know, quite frankly, I think we all agree that what we're looking for is someone who will interpret the Constitution honestly. And that Constitution was framed by men. You can't say they were all convictional Christians. That would not be true. But you can say that the Constitution was given birth out of an explicitly Christian worldview. The Christian worldview is what gave us our understanding of law, our understanding of truth, and our understanding of the cultural goods that the Constitution was intended to preserve, including personal liberty. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Frank calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Frank, it's your turn. Frank, do we lose you? All right, we lost Frank, but his point was that he would confirm. He said he was impressed with Robert's concern with the rule of law. And that's, I think, what a lot of folks went away with from these hearings. By the way, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The confirmation of the 17th Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court is just a big deal. And one of my concerns is that there are a lot of Christians, there are a lot of citizens out there who are looking at this with a kind of disinterest that considers that we have no role to play now. I mean, after all, the role being played by the Senate Judiciary Committee and ultimately by the full Senate, that's a constitutionally assigned role. The role played by the president, he fulfilled his constitutional responsibility in making the nomination. And it's easy for citizens looking at the judicial process, especially the confirmation process, to say we don't have any influence. But we do. We do, because this is how democracy works. We have a say in electing a president who will nominate the kind of justices we want to see on the court. And we have a say in electing the kind of senators who will confirm the kind of nominee that we believe should sit on the court. Very quickly, we're going to go to Harold calling from Louisville. Harold, it's good to have you. Would you vote yes or no?
Yes, in half a heartbeat. Judge Roberts, this cool, calm, and collected, answering questions extemporaneously, off the cuff, without missing a beat, and without referring to the first written piece of paper. It's like he's got 17 filing cabinets worth of knowledge up in his mind.
You know, I was impressed with the same thing, Harold, and I have to tell you, my first thought was, if I ever got in trouble, I want this guy as my attorney, because I was just so impressed with how he articulated arguments. He never raised his voice. He never lost his cool. He never had to search through his mental files for something to say. He also demonstrated something which I think disarmed an awful lot of people. I think he liked the process. And I can sympathize with that, because I got to tell you, I think I would have liked it too. Had I been in his shoes, I think I would have enjoyed that. Why? Because he's got nothing to be ashamed of. He is coming with the knowledge and the experience and the convictions that will make for an outstanding Chief Justice of the United States of America. He was talking to people who know less about the law than he knows, and frankly, have less of a concern for the court than he has had. He has personal ties to this court. He was the clerk to the late Chief Justice William Rehnquist. This is a man who clearly reveres the court on which we hope he will serve. Indeed, the court we hope he will lead. Now, I mentioned earlier this week that when you listen to all the give and take, all the questions and answers, there were some places where I had some questions. I'd like to know more about what Judge Roberts thinks about the privacy rights supposedly found in the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I'd like to know how he understands equal protection and due process rights in the midst of all this. But you know what? We really have to come down to a basic trust in the process. Trust in the fact that President Bush would appoint someone who, after all, represents what he is looking for in a justice and in a chief justice. This is a man with a long track record, with an awful lot of connections, who's been serving in government for a long time. It's not as if he's been hiding out somewhere, and that's why he was a target for those who don't want to see the court move in the direction that he would take it. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. We're talking about what really matters. Christians need to be insightful, educated, alert, and ready to articulate how we understand these issues. That's our job, salt and light. I'll be right back. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. We've been talking about some of the most important issues that arose during the course of the confirmation hearings for Judge John Roberts to be the 17th Chief Justice of the United States. Folks, we need to remember the stature of that role. Constitutionally, he is just one among nine justices. Just one vote, no more, no less. But there is vast influence that is invested in the role of the Chief Justice. After all, as the Chief Officer of the Court, he gets to preside over the oral arguments. He presides over the court's conference of the justices when decisions are made. If he's in the majority in a case, he assigns the writing of the majority opinion. He also serves as chairman of the Judicial Conference of the United States. He has a lot to say about the administration of government and federal courts at every level. We need a man who understands the law, who indeed reveres the law. We need a man who respects the rule of law, but has a humble approach to the judiciary. The last thing we need is a man who is going to see as his mission the setting loose of justices and judges to revolutionize America. A revolution is what we have observed in recent years. That's that forward march of progress that Senators Schumer and Kennedy were talking about. The United States Supreme Court and the lower federal courts have been involved for years in finding new rights and in, for that matter, just establishing the sexual revolution in the law. There has been a vast expansion of federal power, and there has been a social revolution that has been aided and abetted by an activist judiciary. Now, in reality, we always agree with a court that agrees with us, and we disagree with a court that hands down what we see as disagreeable opinions. The long test of history is whether or not the court truly honors and reveres the rule of law. There will be all kinds of issues that will arise. There will be all kinds of decisions to be made by future courts, with or without John Roberts as the next Chief Justice. But what I saw during these hearings reassures me that this is a man who understands the role of the judiciary. This is a man who honors the rule of law, and I like his humble approach to the role of the judge. I like the metaphor of the umpire. What, after all, do we expect of an umpire? That he will be honest, that he will be observant, that he will know the rules, and that he will apply the rules fairly. When it comes right down to it, I think that's a pretty good description of what we're looking for in a judge at any level, and what we're looking for out of a judge at the very highest level. If Judge John Roberts is confirmed, he will become the nation's 17th Chief Justice. If the Lord gives him long length, he could live for many years and could presumably serve as many as 3 decades on the court. That ought to humble us all. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.